Good morning. The reading today is from Luke 21, verses 5 through 19. When some were speaking about the temple, how it was adorned with beautiful stones and gifts dedicated to God, he said, "As for these things that you see, the days will come when not one stone will be left upon another, and all will be thrown down." They asked him, "Teacher, when will this be? And what will be the sign that this is about to take place?" And he said, "Beware that you're not led astray, for many will come in my name and say, 'I am he,' and the time is near. Do not go after them. When you hear of wars and insurrections, do not be terrified, for these things must take place first, but the end will not follow immediately." Then he said to them, "Nations will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be great earthquakes, and in various places famines and plagues, and there will be dreadful portents and great signs from heaven. But before all this occurs, they will arrest you and persecute you. They will hand you over to synagogues and prisons, and you will be brought before kings and governors because of my name. This will give you an opportunity to testify. So make up your minds not to prepare your defense in advance, for I will give you words and a wisdom that none of your opponents will be able to withstand or contradict. You will be betrayed even by parents and brothers, by relatives and friends, and they will put some of you to death. You will be hated by all because of my name, but not a hair on your head will perish. By your endurance, you will gain your souls."
Thank you for that reading. And before I start, I just want to say thank you to this church for supporting me in my journey to ministry, which was kind of a zigzag. And it was great that you were there for me, and I've had a wonderful time in ministry. I'm very happy that I was able to follow my call, so thank you. All right, as you were listening to that reading, I bet you were thinking, whoa, it's a kind of a scary passage, isn't it? Talks about things we would rather not think about. Cities destroyed, wars, insurrections, famine, earthquakes, plagues. And Jesus isn't very reassuring about his followers' personal fates either. You'll be arrested, betrayed, hated. And then he ends with a seemingly impossible promise. Not a hair on your head will be harmed. You will gain your souls. Usually, I'd rather not preach on material like this, and you probably would rather not walk through it with me. So why am I doing it? Because I think the people who put the lectionary together knew that the church needs, occasionally, to look at the tough stuff in order to be strengthened in our faith and our calling as Christians. And I think especially in these contentious times, we need to know how to be or become or stay faithful Christians, even in the face of what we know is out there. So I chose to preach on this because there are passages like this throughout the Bible. If you read it, many of the Psalms start by talking about terrible things happening to the psalmist and his people. The prophets, there's so many dire pictures of things that are about to happen to the kingdom. And the chapters in the Bible which describe the history of Israel, I mean, if you read them, they can be really disheartening. But there are descriptions of battles and court intrigues and corruption and idolatry. Another reading for today is from the book of Malachi, which is equally pessimistic. And then there's the book of Job, which is one of the most searing pictures of personal tragedy that was ever written. And there are laments throughout scriptures. So it's in there. I chose this passage because Jesus walked the roads of this earth in a society of humans very much like ourselves. He knew every aspect of human life, witnessed all the harms that people do to each other, all the frailties and vulnerabilities, all the ways that time and nature can hurt us. He knew what his followers would face after he left them, and he wanted them to know that he knew. He knew that they would have to find a way to live out their belief in him, to follow his teachings after he was gone. You know, we face the same questions. So, let's look at this. Now that first sentence can be a puzzler. I mean, it's talking about the temple. They were talking about beautiful stones, gifts dedicated to God. And let's know what the temple was. It was being built by King Herod, yeah, the very one that tried to kill Jesus. And it had been being built for about 30 years at the time that this event occurred, and it was not completed for another 30 years. It was huge. It was probably one of the biggest constructions in the ancient world. And King Herod saw it through to the end. And the interesting thing is that it was also used as the place of worship throughout its whole construction. And it was the very center. Jerusalem, every Jew had to go there on holidays, couldn't worship anyplace else, could have services at home or in the synagogue, but for the big holidays, everybody had to come. And it was the center of not only religious, but political life. And if you want to read the history of the temple, it's people, different factions fought over it, and most recently, when this happened, the Romans tried to put a statue of the emperor in it in order to bring the Jews to heel. So it was a center, and when the disciples are walking past that, they're going, this is huge. I mean, the Wailing Wall that we see, or that you see if you go to Jerusalem, is just the pedestal that the temple was on, and it is 20 feet high. It was huge, and it was beautifully decorated, and it was the center of life. So from the disciples' point of view, it was kind of like, well, isn't this what we have to pay attention to? Is this where Jesus' new kingdom is going to start? But Jesus knows, and Luke's readers knew, because Luke wrote in like AD 90 or sometime around there, that very same temple only stood after it was finished for 7 years. And there was a rebellion in Jerusalem, and the Romans came in. And as amazing as it was that that temple was built, it's even more amazing that they took it down, all of it, and distribute and sort of send all the people into exile. So if the disciples had thought the temple and all that goes with it is what we are supposed to be trusting in, Jesus was telling them, don't do that. And then the disciples are dismayed. I mean, as you might be, you know, if you look at any institution and think you can trust it, and then somebody says, no, it's going to be gone. So they say, Jesus, what's going to happen next? It's a reasonable question. And when Jesus says, beware that you are not led astray, it seems like a non sequitur. Many will come in my name and say, I am he, and the time is near. Do not go after them. All right, I can see why the disciples wanted reassurance. I mean, this was a dangerous time. But there's this tendency in human affairs to want some kind of certainty beyond what other people have, to want something that really cannot be given to us. And in our faith, there have been periods, starting with the year, I think it was 100 AD, in a little town called Papusa, Italy, where people decide, yes, I know when the end time is coming. In the middle of the 19th century, a group of people called the Millerites gave away all their property, climbed up on roofs, because they knew the end was coming and Jesus was coming back on that particular day. And what does that do? I mean, it may comfort us if we are having a tough time, and we all have tough times, to think, this is just, it's going to go away. I don't have, something is wonderful is going to happen. But what it does is it takes our focus away from now, here. How do we live? By Jesus' rules, by Jesus' example, by his words. And it can feel like a refuge to live in the future, but it can also be a threat. I mean, there are people who spend a lot of time worrying about, oh God, what's going to happen next, and predicting the worst, and living as if the worst has already happened. And it's easy to do that these days. There's a lot of stuff out there which is very discouraging. But what Jesus is saying is, again, look at where you are right now, what you can do right now. And he also then goes on to say, right now is going to contain some hard stuff. When you hear of wars and insurrections, do not be terrified. Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes, and in various places, famines and plagues. Well, you know, he's not talking about anything special. I mean, if you look at history from even before his time, there were wars and insurrections. There were earthquakes. There were volcanic eruptions. Things happened. And we have seen the same thing. So I think, why does he bring this up? Because Jesus wants the disciples to be clear that the world that they will testify to will be pretty much the same world they have known. And there will be no special dispensation or special changes for them. As for wars and insurrections, they are the product of our human sinfulness. When people follow the teachings of Jesus, when we are generous, humble, loving, forbearing, we generally don't go to war. And wars fought in the name of religion are really pride, anger, fear, greed, power lust, manifesting, masquerading as faith, taking the name of faith when they are nothing like it. And Jesus and other holy men and women came for the whole world to preach this message. But the fact is, so often, the world will reject those teachings and go to war. And now in our own time, we face a lot of this stuff. Wars, insurrections, they happen to be across the seas, but also closer to home, a rising tide of antagonism, scapegoating, anger, blaming, finger-pointing, calling each other names, which is unprecedented in my 76 years of existence. So it may not be war with guns, but it is war, and it is being waged among us. Does it help us to know that this is not the first time that people have descended into this madness, even as we hope it will be the last? So the question is, how, as people of Christ, do we live and represent Christ and follow Christ in these times? Well, this passage is discouraging, but there are hints in it. By staying close and getting closer to the teachings of Jesus, for example, and his person. By not, no matter what, reducing people to labels, no matter how you may disagree with them or anything else about them. Remember that Jesus, and this is where Bible study comes in, Jesus spoke respectfully to all the people he met. Pretty much. Sometimes he lost his temper. But for the most part, when he met Pharisees or Roman soldiers or lawyers who were out to get him, he asked them questions directly. He spoke to them clearly. He didn't call them names. Occasionally he did, but that was when he was really pushed. And he also reached out to people that his society despised. Women. I mean, women were part of his entourage, we're pretty sure. He went out, he reached out, he touched sick people, which in those days, in a Jewish society, meant you were instantly unclean. He talked to people about loving each other, and he talked to people about the love that he had for them. So if we follow that example, if we're inclusive, if we're welcoming to everyone we meet, if we greet each person as a unique, never to be duplicated individual, how can we not begin to build bridges? If we meet each person with respect, calling out to them to join us, but never trying to force them or argue them into it, we could testify to our own beliefs and maybe build a bridge to an enemy becoming a friend and a colleague. In doing this, we need to be realistic about the cost as well as the joy of discipleship. When Jesus told his disciples that they would be arrested and persecuted, boy, that's heavy. But let's look at the mechanism behind that. The last thing that someone in the midst of this hating and defaming of other people wants to hear is statements of love and acceptance for that person. For the people who are already in the grip of antagonism, hearing kindness and love toward those people will turn them against you too, because that's just the way it is. Until people decide to change, they invest more and more in that hostility, and we have to know that that's what's going on. And so how do we stand up to this? I mean, foxhole prayers are great, and we've all had our moments, our foxhole moments, but what really works is to spend time getting to know Jesus in advance, thinking about his love and his teachings and the difficult ways that he expressed himself. So that's why I'm putting up a plug here for Bible study. It really helps to speak from your heart, from his heart actually, rather than from your own mind. And that's another reason I chose to preach on this text today. Many of us are going to look across that holiday table at family members and friends who might, in that moment, believe and say things which we are categorically opposed to. I mean, holidays are a tricky time. Now, it's a lot less consequential than being thrown in jail for your beliefs, but it still can be unpleasant. And what Jesus advises his followers works for this too. Don't rehearse your lines beforehand, because the picture you may have in your mind of that other person is your picture and may not be the whole of who they really are. So even though it seems strange, he says, go into that moment of trial with no preconditions. After having spent time in prayer and reflection, asking God, the Holy Spirit, Jesus, however you conceive of that power, to give you the words. And the lesson applies for the time before and after Thanksgiving too. Christmas is coming up. Because discord and division is such a problem in these times, in this place. And let us not be unaware of what's going on. I mean, I just read an article I happen to subscribe in New Scientist magazine, and it sort of sums up how the aggressive manipulation of social media by nations or criminals is damaging society. It gins up outrage and prejudice among citizens who use social media, which is pretty much all of us, I think, in one way or another. We can apply the teachings of Jesus to that too. It's time to choose which role we will play. To stir up antagonism or try to calm it. The author of the article says, you are the off switch. guarding against outrage, pushing against the desire to believe what is convenient, and simply becoming less angry about what you see online. You may lose some battles, but you can help win the war. And that's what Jesus taught. And after all, just like the forces that make weather and shape the land, create hurricanes and earthquakes, nobody among us escapes loss, injury, disappointment, sorrow. Whenever I preach and I look out over a congregation, I can see faces that sometimes I know the story of their losses and their sorrows. Sometimes I don't. But I don't think anybody goes through life without some kind of wound. And that goes for the people we disagree with, too. So if we know each other the way Jesus wants us to know each other, that will help to back away from this anger, this prejudice, this evil current that is running through our society. You may know or you may not know the scars and triumphs that the person across the table from you bears, but his or her ideas, hateful or not, were born of that journey. And on this Thanksgiving, let us try to see things about each other, even those people, for which we can be thankful. Nothing is black or white. There is also much goodness and bounty in our world to be celebrated, even while we clearly see the hard parts. And we may be given the opportunity to transform a life, who knows? I haven't seen it happen so much myself, but I have heard about it and I've heard people's stories. And if we change one person, we are beginning to change the world, and maybe that one person is ourselves. And I will close with just a meditation on the miracle of our being here today. We each started from a tiny egg, smaller than the head of a pin. And yet everything we are, all the marvelous mechanisms of our bodies and our minds, came from that one little place. I cannot believe that God is not in that process. So we are precious. Treat each other as precious. Treat the people you meet as precious. Because that way, we can save them.